Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Monday night segment of Horsefly Chronicles Radio with myself, Julia Siracusa, and Philip Siracusa. We are broadcasting live from the United Paranormal Radio Network on 107.7 FM and 105.3 FM from New Orleans. This evening's show is sponsored by Carnation, so we want to thank them for their sponsorship. You will also have to do a few things in order to participate. Go over to the YouTube channel, United Public Radio, and get into chat. Subscribe if you haven't. You can go into all of the Facebook United Public Radio stations, Twitch, SoundCloud, and Podbean. I can only respond to your comments on YouTube. So you can go in there and ask our guest as many questions as you like, and we will ask him. And also go to the UFOs Undercover with Joe Maltaldo on Facebook as well.
Wow.
Yay!
Big introduction. Tonight we have someone who's well known within the paranormal community. We used to have him on a previous network.
Yes.
And now we're on this huge network. And this man is intelligent. He has the most incredible books out. Just to read his books alone,
Yeah.
you feel like you need a degree because there's so much, they're so
Yeah.
thorough, they're so educated. And he really like dots his I's, crosses his T's, and goes through every single thing about paranormal phenomenon, the existence of the supernatural. It's really impressive. And the third book that just came out was a mind blower for us. It was like,
Oh,
wow.
I really enjoyed it. I
But
couldn't.
without further ado, who are we talking about?
All right, guys. Well, let's welcome Keith Linder to the show. Keith is an IT professional holding over four certifications in the IT space. In 2012, he moved into a house right outside of Seattle. The experiences they witnessed there would change their lives forever. He has written three books on his experiences: The Bothell House, Poltergeist of Washington State, Attachments, Poltergeist of Washington State 2. And the most recent book, Poltergeist, The Night Side of Physics. I cannot even explain the amount of research that has went into all of these books. He is a research genius. And you can find all of his books on Amazon.com. So let's please welcome Keith into the show.
Welcome, Keith.
Hey, Julia. Hey, Philip. How y'all doing? Good to be
Great,
here.
great. Just looking at the books and going over the third book is like, wow. So really quick, because we have a new audience,
Yes.
if you could just tell people how you got started and what happened in your previous home so they get to know you just a little bit.
I can give everybody a quick synopsis. And once again, thanks for having me. So you said it in the introduction, 2012, May 1st, me and my girlfriend at the time moved into a house, suburbs outside Seattle, began having what we now know as poltergeist activity, pretty much on day one. The activity this house is known for or famous for, we experienced during the 4 years that we lived there include three Bibles catching fire, multiple instances of inexplicable wall writings, something like a black oil-like substance, large or heavy objects being thrown, water puddle phenomena dripping from the ceiling onto the floor, which would appear inexplicably out of nowhere. And then just the constant, in addition to the Bibles catching fire, other spontaneous fires that were just abrupt or erupt at will. And in between those, multiple paranormal teams coming in, leaving. The infamous Ghost Adventures were there, but for the 5 hours that they were there, found nothing, left nothing. And then just a lot of crazy activity in between that. The both of you know, that seems to associate with both demonic and poltergeist activity. So yeah, it was a 4 years of living hell. Caught a lot of heat from portions or percentage of the paranormal community. A lot of people didn't believe us, thought we were faking, making it up. Of course, we weren't. And then a UK team came in and lived in the home for 3.5 weeks and then just cracked the case open with their scientific methodology of going after poltergeist phenomena. And that's pretty much what both books are about. Book one is just my 4-year ordeal. Book two is my moving out of the house, still experiencing activity in my new place of residence, as well as answering the question of why the house was haunted in the first place and what the black wall was made out of. And book three, we'll talk about tonight, the night side of physics, if you will.
Very impressive.
I want to show everybody. I showed everybody the first book. I want to show everybody the second one, and the third one that we're going to talk about tonight. And I also want to thank you for sending me all these books. That was so nice of you.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really attractive looking book. I'm impressed. Really nice. And what you have inside is more impressive. You know, you put a lot of work into this, Keith.
Yeah.
Yeah, I pretty much started book three. Almost immediately after writing book two, I don't think the pen was dry very long. And I knew there would be a book three within minutes of completing book two, for the simple fact, and y'all know this as well, is there's just a lot of information, guys. There's no way, and you got three books in your hand now, so you know, there's no way you could have condensed all that information to one book. It just, I mean, the seams would fall off. There's not enough glue to hold the pages together. So it had to be, I had to sort of, you know, partition my experience of, you know, you got to talk about the house. You got to get the hell house out the way, right? You got to document that encounter. Yeah. And then you got to see, well, am I going to be followed? If I'm followed, then I got a story to tell. Am I going to write a book two if I'm not followed? Well, obviously I was followed. So that spawned book two. But neither book one or book two, they sort of hinted at it, but they didn't go deep into it. But neither one went toward the physics of it, the mechanics of activity that not only I've experienced, but you two have experienced, your listeners have experienced, people around the world have experienced. And when I say mechanics, I mean objects levitating, objects floating, zooming across the room, phantom noises, loud bangs, water puddle, fires. You know, what causes them? How are the spirits able to do that? We know they can do it, obviously, but what does science say could be behind the reason? And that's pretty much what I wanted book three to be about. If you noticed, Julia, book three has an enormous amount of previous poltergeist cases.
Yes.
Not just the Bothell Hell House. That was by design, because one of the things I noticed the paranormal community does is, as a whole, is they like to silo cases. They like to, you know, spread them apart. But if you take all the cases that have been documented, you will see a common thread runs through all of them. You know, from beginning to end, the activity begins abruptly. The activity ends abruptly. Some of the top five things that happen in my house happen in other people's homes. So there's nothing new under the sun, except for the fact that every case has this little snowflake, if you will, of being a little bit different. And I think that area of being different has to do with the specific occupants of the home. You know, me and Tina, no kids, no pets, you know, a family of five with kids and pets. They're probably going to have a different experience with a different type of poltergeist who's able to feed off more energy versus two people.
Right. That's 100% true.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's fascinating and it's scary. And again, to the listener out there, paranormal phenomena does exist. Keith Linder, myself, and Julia, two separate homes, similar experiences. Oz, I believe, is over as of July. But, you know, what Keith is trying to say is that, you know, there are people out there that may never get it. And, you know, I say one thing, Keith, when people tell me, you know, I don't believe, you know what? I say that's a good thing because sometimes not believing doesn't make it manifest into realism. And that's one of the trickiest things that we've learned is that the non-believers, the atheists that would come to the home, and my home, for example, they would leave here with a question mark of what are we dealing with? But I found that the people that do believe and really put a lot into it is able to make the unknown manifest. So something goes above and beyond. For example, we see orbs, and orbs are these circles of energy. Now look, most orbs, yes, dust particles and water vapors and whatever, but there are real orbs. And I believe from our experience and from all the teams that we've had here, that's the beginning stages of the energy floating around sometimes before the manifestation. And one thing about your case, Keith, that rang true to me and similarities is that when you talk about these little people, these
minions,
yeah. And well, I haven't seen them in a year and a half, and I thank God for that. But we did see something like that, and it was once a day, very quick, and you really don't know what you're looking at. You don't know if it's hallucinations.
You're talking about the minions that you see in the house.
Yes.
Not the minions that you were talking about in your book, I don't think.
Like the little trolls things that are running around.
Probably
themselves. So it's scary. It's real. And you know, does everyone have a paranormal activity around? Energy's everywhere, right? We're all energy. But what makes your case different, Keith, is that you had so much under one roof in that period, and you've had things happen in that home with the wall, for example, the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
And the burning Bible, which made the news. That's scary, right? Because now we're talking, this is the real deal, and this is, I would take that if that happened here, which it didn't, a threat. That's like a threat. Yeah. Like saying, okay, you want to play the choir, here I am, and I could destroy you. What's your thoughts on that today? You know, thinking back on the writing on the wall and the burning Bible, and you've had the heavy objects, you know, lifted across the room. Today's day and age, how do you feel about that? Do you still get the chills?
Yeah, good question. You can never grasp it all, right? How hard the human mind works is, you know, we live in a 3D world. Therefore, when things like that we see with our eyes and our brain tries to compute it and think it and store it away and make sense of it, you know, you run into that brick wall, right? How does an object just spontaneously catch fire by itself, or is it by itself? Well, we know, you know, you and I, it's not by itself. However, we can't see the cause agent. We can't see the spirit that's performing that. But, you know, I could be sitting on my couch right now, and then every now and then I ask myself the question, that really happened. That really, you know, there's anniversary dates for everything, right? So I know in my head what day, and I always know what day down to the day and the minute that it occurred, which Bible caught fire when. Like today would be like, oh, the sixth anniversary of the second Bible catching fire. You never lose sight of those things if you've lived it and seen it. And yeah, it feels good to be living and walk away and tell that story. But at the same time, you try to understand or make sense of it all of, you know, there's 7 billion people on this planet. And I saw that. I saw, you know, what I saw, and I'll defend it to the death. And you might not never have answers, but you're always going to be asking yourself the question, you know, why me? Why did Tita and I, why 3 Bibles? Why not 4? Why not 2? Why just leave it at 1? But you're right. It was a challenge. It was a throwdown. It was a mental, psychological war of, hey, Keith and Tina, yeah, I can bring all the Bibles from the Bible store all you want. Go at it. I mean, it's open sale day. We're going to burn them all because we're letting you and Tina know that that doesn't affect us. And psychologically, me and Tina on the receiving end of that, we hear that, you know, because your brain takes over, right? You got someone, we're programmed so much, you know, by what we see on TV and Hollywood movies of, oh my God, they're burning the Bibles. Oh man, who would do that? You know, it was like Satan or Lucifer, you know. So your brain goes to the worst case scenario, and the spirits know that. They know through, you know, propaganda of, we're going to burn your Bibles. We'll take a few in the process. We're going to write on the wall. You can leave the room and go get a glass of water and come back, and your water looks like there was a graffiti party in your absence. We're only talking about a total of 3 minutes. So how does the brain make sense of that? And the brain, you know, the average human brain can't. Mine can't. I doubt any brain could. But it happened. It doesn't make it less real. You know, the Portuguese doesn't care whether you and I or anybody else believes them. They believe in themselves. Therefore, they're doing it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And, you know, demons, entities are so far advanced and way, way ahead of us that they know what's going to happen before it happens, and they know how to cause the chaos and the problems within our lives. So they stem off these little trigger objects, right? They'll do things, make things disappear, right? Notorious for the Amityville Horror case, right? Yeah. The money disappeared before the wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And what they do is then they cause a fight. They cause friction, negative energy.
Yeah.
People argue with each other. And then, long and behold, the dark energy gets stronger and is almost able to manifest in a way where now it has control over the people, in a sense where bad things can happen. You know, to the listener out there, once again, these stories, these are not made up. These are true. And I was one of the most hardcore skeptic people. I say this for years, till we're living it. And, you know, you could try to debunk almost everything, but you can't debunk things going off by themselves. For example, toys without batteries. You just can't do it. You can't debunk the black shadows coming from absolutely nowhere and the pictures and then things levitating. Now, we never see anything levitate here.
No.
So it leads me to believe that what Keith was dealing with was very, very strong.
More of a poltergeist.
Yeah, a very strong energy. And he's right. It takes a strong mind, right, to think, you know, how am I living with this? How am I still
How do you get through it?
How am I getting through it? You know, Keith, one of the things that we do is there's a part of us that we say, you know what, it wasn't real. We do that for a reason. In our own case, it wasn't real. It was just, we'll think of every excuse of trying to live happy and not like, I cannot believe what, instead of feeding into that so much, we're like, well, you know, maybe there's logic behind all these things. That's just for the sanity part.
Yeah.
But the truth really is, it's real, period. And your case, like I said, again, to the listener, you know, Keith put a lot of work. He wasn't just telling a story. He's had ghost adventures, had numerous teams at his home. But what's in his book is detailed, so magnificent that the read is just incredible. You want to take your time and digest it because there's so much information within these books. And having said that, Julia, let's get to some of the questions about the book.
Okay, well, let's go to chapter one of your book, the third book, The Truck. We can, like Phil said, we can relate to so many of these things in this chapter. People have said you and Tina have made a lot of this stuff up. And why would you make it up? And, you know, you both were very, very, very successful. Why would you make any of that up? And what do you say to people who tell you, like, talk negatively about your case?
Two things. Number one, the thing I tell myself and Tina is, if there's people out there saying negative things about me, Tina, or our case, and rule number one, they don't know us. But if they're saying negative things anyway, that means we're on the right path, right?
Yes.
Because you're going to get detractors, you know, we just call them haters or trolls or something.
Mm-hmm.
I would be nervous if I didn't have any. Okay, if I didn't have, I'm not seeking the choir. You know, I'm not.
Yeah, that's true.
Following.
Right.
So therefore, that reality is there. So check that off the box. Now, number two, I tell people who would like to criticize from a keyboard or from a mouse pad or from a tablet is, you are only looking at our case through a keyhole, through a door, a steel door, that's on a fast-moving train.
Mm-hmm.
And you're only getting maybe 1% of the truth. And it behooves you, that person, to do their own research, their own digesting, ask questions. Y'all know me, I don't run from questions. And then come up with an intelligent conclusion after you've had some facts your way. But to base your assumptions off a TV show, yeah, off what you might have heard secondhand, you know, who does that? Who does that? We don't raise our kids to do that, so therefore, why are adults doing that? But that's a long story. So that's what I would tell them. And then these three books, I'm like, you know, read book one, book two, book three, or whatever, and form an opinion afterwards. But I preface every book that I wrote, including the third one, I say early on in the chapter or in the intro, I will not pull punches with you. I will not sugarcoat the facts. Mm-hmm. I will not add in to what happened. There's no need, you know. Me and Tina would have been perfectly fine if the Poltergeist just burnt one Bible. Therefore, mm-hmm. why did I have to feel the need to tell the world we had three? The reason why we had three Bibles catch fire is because guess what? Three Bibles caught fire. You know, yeah. We're not sitting around our house around the coffee table coming up with say, well, how many should we say caught fire? I like four myself. No, I think we should do three. No, people like you, me, and other people who experience Poltergeist activity, we don't do that. But the audience, a percentage of the audience thinks that we do. And long story short, you can't help those people.
Yeah.
You really, nor should you try to cater your experience to bring them along the way. I'm not trying to bring skeptics along with me. But skeptics are more than free to read any book, and I include my email address in all my books, and then reach out to me and ask me any questions.
Yeah, I think that you're a hard person to debunk.
Yeah.
You know, when our case first came out, it reminds me, I was called every name in the book. It's mm-hmm. fake, it's this, it's that, you want to sell books. And I says to myself, you know what? I know it's real. My family knows it's real, so let's just prove it to the world. And that's when we went on our journey to bring in paranormal teams, right? And you did something, you know, you did a lot of similarities where you had the people from the UK, and I think that's where you broke ground, right? And yeah. They were like, they got the evidence. And yeah, sometimes I did that, you did it for a reason. Look, I tell people, don't believe me. You know what? Don't believe a word I'm saying, okay? But now I'm going to go ahead and do my due diligence and bring in numerous teams from around the world. And then let's say if you can criticize everybody and debunk everybody. And looking at your case and what you've dealt with, my hat goes off to you because you've dealt with a lot. I mean, really. It's not easy. You know, people think, well, it's a ghost and it's exciting to investigate. There's after effects. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of effects dealing with negative energy that we live with, okay? Whether we choose to believe or not, there are effects of this. And, you know, in being in the paranormal community since 2013, I could tell you that, God, there's so much death. It's just, you know, now look, there's natural causes, but sometimes I watch people say, I can't wait to go to this location. I'm so excited. And then 2 years later, the person's dying of whatever. Again, there's coincidence, and then there's, well, did you walk into something that is unnatural, that is affecting you because you challenged it?
Yeah.
You know, Keith, one thing I've learned is that, yeah, if you challenge the unknown, be careful. You could all speak the words of Melinda Provoke. Uh-huh. And look at me, and I'm big and tough and strong. Well, I've seen the biggest, toughest, strongest people in the paranormal field fall hard. Because, you see, you can't see the enemy. And the enemy will get you on his watch, not yours.
And you actually put something like that in your book, on chapter 12, called Minions. Am I correct? Because in 2014, you had your attorney and your former friend that came to your house. And I guess what she did was provoke what was there, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
And then she became a target. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was my former attorney. We're still friends. She came in sort of like, you know, talking to the spirits nonchalantly, you know, come out wherever you are, show me you're real or exist. And you know, that, you see this a lot on TV. I mean, that's what makes the paranormal TV show so successful. But you're right. You don't know who or what you're talking to,
yes.
What portal door you're opening. And you're right, Phil, the spirits are going to get with you on their time, okay? Mm. My friend, upon leaving my house, got to the SeaTac airport and noticed her passport was gone, her identification papers to travel the world abroad were gone. And so that was a big inconvenience of getting that stuff and getting back out of the country. Then she started having activity in three houses. You know, I just had activity in one. She had activity in three houses. And her son, her children, start seeing shadowy figures. They spoke of the mattress indentations, light fixtures blinking off and on. She has a wine cellar, and all the corks popped out of all the wine bottles, one by one. Da 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 da. There's a video in the book you were referencing, Julia, of she called me, and the lights in her house are blinking off and on. At the same time, mine in the Bothell house are blinking off and on. I kid you not, at the same time. And we're maybe, I don't know, 1,800 miles apart. So, yeah, you're right. And people have been known to have died mysteriously, illness, undiagnosed, and things like that. So you have to be very careful. Even me, you know, the jury is still out on, you know, on me, on all of us, really. When you look at the abyss looks back at you. Rhonda, may she rest in peace, did finally successfully committed suicide after four failed attempts in the house. So the house has a victim. The house has a person that they can claim that they were successful in ending their own life, and that was the late Rhonda. And for your listeners who don't know who Rhonda is, Rhonda and her family lived in the house 5 years before me and Tina, who spoke of similar poltergeist activity. So yeah, there you have it. But yeah, be careful. Anybody out there new to the paranormal, be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you chase. And you can't turn that light off. You can't turn that faucet off. You might think you can. You might say abracadabra or repeat a Zach Bagans quote or something, but Zach can't help you. Travel Channel can't help you. Nobody can help you.
That's true. You know, a lot of these TV shows, look, they're entertainment. There's a lot of fluff to it.
Yeah.
There's some truthism as fact, you know, based on things. But when you live the real life like you're living, like we've lived, and then you have a TV show come in, well, there's fluff to it. There's added things. And then they try to say, well,
yeah,
if nothing happens here when we're here, then there is nothing here. Well, let me tell you something. That is the most untruth statement. Because do you think an entity or a demon cares?
Nope.
Oh, wait a second. This celebrity on television's at my home, so I have to perform. I mean, come on.
That I never understood that argument.
Really? You think an entity is going to care who you are?
It's
no,
true.
I'll tell you what the entity's thinking. The entity's thinking the how demon. I'm going to drain their energy and destroy them years down the road. That's what it's thinking. It doesn't really care. Oh, look at me. Look at me. This guy's a celebrity, so I'm going to be with him. It doesn't work like that. And I watch a lot of these shows, and I do laugh. They're entertaining. There's some good shows, but for the most part, it doesn't work the way you're seeing it on television. I'm sorry, but it doesn't. It doesn't say, spirit, okay, appear, and then here's my magic wand, disappear. Really?
Well,
I could be a multimillionaire if I could prove the existence of before and after the supernatural.
And
you can't. It's not on our watch. It
exactly.
is on their watch. But what we do know, here's what we do know. In your case, in our case, in other cases, that they latch on to our energy. They affect the emotions, the thought process. They go through a mental state of how we think and use our minds. And then they also cripple your finances, your health, your well-being, your thoughts, your suicidal tendencies, those around you, and they try to isolate you from the world because that's what they do as they're breaking you down. That's the truth. That's the realism of paranormal activity. So, you know, Keith, I know like you've had people there and, you know, where they didn't get much, and we've had the same thing.
Yeah.
We've had people, oh, wait, there's nothing at the Horsefly Home. I can't get anything. I've been here for an hour now.
And then you get a phone call a day later.
Yeah.
That's something
I mean, and I laugh.
We don't laugh, but it's
No,
just
I
the
laugh
way
now. I don't laugh because now I'm like, uh-oh, that they could be in trouble.
yeah.
And I really mean that sincerely, because a lot of these cases where you leave, do you think the spirits say, well, they're gone now, so I'm gonna stay behind?
Well, Keith went through that. He
Yeah.
had a very long period of time where they had no activity.
We went through that too,
Yeah.
when we had absolutely nothing. Yeah, Keith, talk about that, when you had the no activity
Yeah.
and then the resurface.
Yeah, so good segue, because in book three, I think it's Poltergeist versus Xbox is the name of the chapter.
Oh, yeah.
And
That was a good.
that was the year 2013, when we moved to 2012, had crazy activity. Then the activity, me and Tina didn't cause it. We don't think we were the cause factor, but the activity came to an abrupt stop. Now, we're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth and say, activity, why did you stop? Long as it stopped, we're fine. However, I always had in the back of my mind, and me and Tina talked about this a lot, of I don't think they're gone. So one of the things we make the mistakes of as a paranormal community as a whole is we equate activity, zero activity, meaning they're gone. I'm trying to bust that open with this book of that's totally wrong. That's a wrong concept to have. We can't equate no activity to no presence no longer in the house, especially
True.
at least with my house. And how we know that is Microsoft had nothing to do with the paranormal. I was a beta tester, prototype tester for their original Xbox 360 and the Kinect. So they would come in and house monitor me. They would bring in their cameras, and almost like filming a movie, except they're monitoring me play their console. And then one afternoon, they, not me, the guys back in headquarters, saw these floating black lava shadows in the background behind me. The Kinect, which if you ever had one, detects motion and whatnot. And it was picking up these floating black, lava shape about the size of a softball, if you will, or beach ball in the background, hovering in the kitchen. And they paused the research because they could not. Them, not me, could not ascertain where that was coming from or why that's there. Okay. And that always stayed with me, because I always had a thought of, if the spirits are here, but they're not active, then they're in a, for lack of a better word, a hibernation state. Okay. But they're very observant, they're watching. And these are engineers at Microsoft, some of the smartest minds in technology, and it blew their minds away. Now, they didn't scream ghost or whatever. To them, it's an anomaly. It's a bug. It's something in the code. But they never seen it in any of the thousands of other houses that they had a prototype. Because I'm not the only prototype tester, but they had it in houses throughout the world. And now you got this house in Bothell, and they couldn't ascertain it. They could not ascertain what those black shadows were. Are. And then finally, when I start seeing them with the naked eye, I put two and two together. I'm like, aha. So I
Yep.
think that's what that energy, and keep in mind what the Kinect saw was, it saw in the infrared spectrum, which I talk a lot about in book three, is we have to put gadgets on our eyes to see infrared, whereas the Kinect was picking it up automatically. So it picked it up, it tracked it, and was able to alert the Microsoft team. But had me or somebody that had been in the home with infrared goggles, I would have saw the same thing with my naked eyes. But I saw it through the console. But it supports my theory of, don't equate zero activity to the house being empty, because I think the spirit, in our case, they were there, obviously, because they came back in 2014. Or I should say they awoken in 2014 and made the activity much worse.
I agree with you. Keith, I'm fascinated by what you said because I agree so much, and here's why I agree. When they say that, okay, we've cleansed the area, we remove the entity, and my biggest question, and on hundreds of shows I've done, I ask people who've done it, well, where did it go? Where'd it go? Did it go back to the
I
belief
mean,
of hell?
we ask ourselves this question
Where'd it
like I
go?
have.
Because,
Where?
and here's the thing,
Oh, it's gone. Yeah, mine is gone. Yeah, we took
yeah,
care
and look, now, We did have an ESPR come here in July, and I could say truthfully that we haven't had that kind of negative activity since July, right?
Right.
But I did raise a question to myself. Well, where is it, right? Or is it what Keith Linder is saying? It's like
Is it
it's just
doormat?
dormant
Yeah.
for a period of time, which we hope not in our case, of course. But is it the truth that it just lays behind the walls and it'll resurface when it feels like it because it doesn't really care?
Yeah, and that's fine. You know, that's fine if we ever get to the point in paranormal research to say, you know what, you know, it's more, how can I say, more intellectual to say it's dormant. Okay. You know, you get a cancer, you got diagnosed with cancer, and the doctor, you know, they want to cut it out of you. Obviously, they want to use radiation to get it out of you. But sometimes the sickness can go benign. And I say your cancer is, you know, benign and went back to sleep or whatever. We'll monitor it, and the next move is the cancer's move. But right now, you're fine, Mr. Lund. You can go on. Oh, you dodged the bullet there, but it's still in you. But it's hibernate. It's benign, okay? And you know, should it resurface, then we'll deal with it then. But to just some paranormal seem to make themselves look like they're the, you know, end all be all, and when it comes to removing spirits of, oh, it's gone now. Well, how did you? We're gone where? Well, I mean,
Yeah.
if you said it's gone, then you should know where it went. Oh, it's gone. You're good. It went in me or went out the window or the door. So yeah, but
Yeah.
say
In
it's
our case,
gone.
I think that it was just more of discovered. You know, like
Well, discovered, but where does it go?
we discovered what
Where
it
does it go?
was
Does it
and
go
where did
back?
it go?
Keith, let me ask you this. Does it go back according to the person's belief in religion? Or is what's your thought on that? Like, you know, Catholic or Christian or whatever. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't think poltergeists or demons for that matter, like there's like, you know, Catholic poltergeists, agnostic poltergeists, you know, Methodist poltergeists, you know. I think everything boils back down to science. I do know because we lived it, the poltergeist knows who in the home, the family or the couple or whoever, who are believers or really true believers of, you know, spirituality. You know, if your religion is, you know, Catholic and you're a true devout Catholic, a believer, you're just not selling wolf tickets, then they know that, okay? And that does play into it either staying in the home or leaving in the home. Because I mean, the poltergeist can only mess with what's already there, okay? It can only play with what's already there. So if you're just mouthing religion just for a mouthpiece to say, hey, I'm Mr. Holy Man and the whole world isn't, the poltergeist is going to know that. And it's not like, ah, whatever, this guy's a fake. So it knows, it can detect snake oil salesmen. But your spirituality, meaning your faith, plays a role of how you're able to deal with it, meaning maintain, not lose your sanity, stay grounded, and things like that. Because our poltergeist knew me and Tina were raised Southern Baptists. It knew that. So it knew some of the things Southern Baptists fear, you know, fire and brimstone and all that. It knew how to sort of work our psyche a little bit, shake us a little bit, because it's trying to pull us down from that hill. Like, hey, you know, your God can't protect you. So it's trying to do all that. We, on the other hand, have to sort of get re-energized, like talking to other Southern Baptists or friends or family, and get re-energized and say, no, stay firm in your belief. You know, you got to plow through it. And that helps. And then, but if you just go in thinking that, no, I'm going to go to the store down the street, I'm going to buy a wooden cross. I don't even believe in crosses. I'm just going to buy one because that's what Hollywood says to do. And I'm going to go in this house and I'm going to go to war with this poltergeist. Your cross is not going to do nothing. It's not going to have any power behind it because it's not the material object, it's the person wielding it. So if you're wielding your foundation and your faith, yeah, that can help. But be careful. If you're a fake, then the poltergeist is going to know that and it's going to use that even more. You know, I would almost say, hypocrite versus believer, poltergeists probably have more fun with hypocrites.
That makes a lot
Yeah, that's scary but true. He's right.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, let's get to another question on
Well,
that, but
we did talk a little bit about the ghost adventures, but the question that I saw in the third book was that I had is when they were researching the black writings on the wall, okay, you cut off a piece of the wall markings and brought it to a lab?
Yeah, the piece of the door after my house went, I guess, public or on the news and ghost of a co-worker at my job who works in the lab. I work for a hardware a computer manufacturer, and we have a lab upstairs. I didn't know we did, but we did. And he said, "Hey, I saw your house on TV. That's some scary stuff." And he asked me, "What was that black stuff made out of?" And I said, "I don't know. We don't know." And he said, "Well, we have equipment upstairs that might be able to test it. And if you can bring it up here, I'll walk you up there and we'll try to test to see what it is." His heart was in the right place. I didn't think technology like that existed, but he sounds sincere. And I went home and chiseled a piece of the door off and came to work the next day and followed him up to his office. And he's running like a big laboratory. And he pulls out this little metal ray gun that's called an XRF gun, XRD gun, and it's used to detect, it can detect substances in metals. It can narrow down the makeup, if you will, of anything. You know, it's a little screen, and it'll pull up the materials, you know, of paint, what's the ingredient. It is pretty accurate. So we put the gun on the wood, and the first reading came back. He was like, "Whoa, that's weird. That's kind of interesting." I'm like, What do you see? What is it?" And then he did a second and a third time. He said, "It's an organic substance. It's unknown. You know, the thing is only going to detect metals, but this is an it's telling me that this is an organic like substance." So he wrote down on a piece of paper the makeup of what came back from the test results. And I start calling major art galleries around the United States. I would show them the picture of my wall writings. I would show them the picture of the chiseled out door. And then I would show them what the gun, the XRF gun, detected. And finally, a lot of museums never heard of, or couldn't tell me, but I found two museums after seeing the material. They said that's bone black. That's bone black, or what it's called, bone char, which is incinerated buffalo or bison bone, which Native Americans used, where a lot of different cultures used. But in North America, Native Americans used it specifically for pictography, calligraphy. And if you've seen the wall writings in my office, you know all that upside down man and symbols and stuff was a Native American language. And incinerated buffalo or bison bone is the primary ingredient, which is organic. And so, yeah, that's how we made that determination of it being bone black. And it's not sold in large quantities. One of the skeptics sent me an email before I discovered what this was. "Oh, you could have bought that paint at Home Depot." And I said, "Well, I want you to call Home Depot in your city and tell them you want a gallon of bone black and see how long it took on, see how long it took on hold." And I never heard back from that person again.
What did they say? What was there in your words? What did they say it was?
Oh, they said it was, I mean, this paint. They were saying it was wet paint, acrylic paint. Of course, they're saying this from their mom's basement behind a keyboard, you know, because they haven't been to the house. But and they're smarter than me, and they're smarter than my laboratory upstairs who test metals all over the world in an XRD gun, which costs, you know, $16,000 to $35,000. So good luck trying to buy one, Mr. Skeptic. But they got all these answers, but they've not done no research. Once again, they've not done no research. They're just mouthing off stuff, right?
Yeah.
But when I presented him with the fact that, and anybody listening to tonight or whenever, call your Home Depot or somebody and say you like a gallon of bone black and see what they tell you over the phone. Call your museum, call your paint store, call anybody, and you'll find out that you're going to be, you know, nobody's going to know what you're talking about. and then go to Google and look up Bone Black, Bone Char yourself, and you'll see. You know, and it's not a big hoopla. What's more mysterious to me now that we know it's Bone Black, going back to what you said earlier, Phil, is how are spirits able to conjure, you know, because that's a material, that's a finite material, right? They're pulling things out of the quantum world, just to use that word, out of the micro world, and they're presenting it to you and me and Mr. House Occupant and to the macro world. So we live in the macro world. What we live in is macro, but believe it or not, all of us alive are more affected by things that are micro, right? We take air in every second, right? But we can't see the air going into our mouths. We just trust it. I trust this air. My heart's beating. My lungs expanding. Oh, my God, I hope this is air going into my mouth. But there's nothing, if you notice in your human body, stopping you from, you know, air, right? So if your air was to change to gas, poison gas, you'd be in trouble right now unless you had a mask to prevent it, because your body's going to still take it in because it needs it. So there's more things in the micro world that's invisible, poltergeists included, minions included, that affect us in the macro world. So you can take your keys that you set on your coffee table, that's macro, and pull it into a hidden dimension that's 1 meter long, you know, half the distance of one hair follicle. That's micro, you know, in an instant. And you don't see your keys anymore. Your keys have not left your room. That's what people have said about the phenomena with this activity is your keys are still in your house. They're just a hidden dimension on the micro level. And when the Portuguese reintroduce it back into the macro, it'll sit it back on your coffee table or somewhere else, you know, that you didn't leave it originally to drive you crazy. But yeah, so that's the duality, micro versus macro.
Fascinating. Once again, I keep using that word because that's what you are, Keith Linder.
We love you, Keith.
I mean, as a man of many knowledge, so much knowledge. And what he's saying is true, because the entities, poltergeists, demons, can make things disappear. Keys, money. Mm-hmm. I put this here, now it's gone. They can do all this. And science cannot explain it, but people in the paranormal can. It does exist. It does happen. Sometimes you just forget things, but other times something mysterious happens where it's still there, but it's not there. And that leads me to Keith Linder. Really quick, people, where can we find these books, Keith?
Yes.
Regardless of your country you live in, Amazon, Poltergeist, The Night Side of Physics came out October of last year. So yeah, Amazon, both Kindle, paperback version. I always recommend people get the paperback versus the Kindle, but either or is fine. But once again, hundreds of thousands of links in the books, interactive. You can click on the links that take you elsewhere. And then you're going to get a huge education of, I think I put maybe 300 other Portuguese cases in the book for the reader to cross-compare. Just cross-compare. And if you had a poltergeist in your home, unfortunately, you'll know what I'm talking about when you read these other cases, because they all have parallels or similarities. We're all cousins, if you will. All poltergeist survivors and demonic survivors, we're all cousins in the sense that the activity, the similarities, but there's also the unique, which makes each house special, you know.
I agree. True. Thank you so much, Keith.
Thank you, Keith, for coming on
the
tonight.
Time went quick, but we're going to do a part two. And I say part two because this is a new network with a lot of new listeners, yep. And we need to have you back because there's so much we didn't go over yet. So once again, everyone, this is Keith Linder. Get the book. Check it out. You'll be amazed.
And we want to also thank Carnation for sponsoring our show. And join us again next Monday at 7:18 EST, coming live from United Public Radio, 107.7 FM and 105.3 FM from New Orleans. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Keith. Thank you, everyone. Our listeners, we love you, and we'll see you next week. Keith Linder will be in touch for a part two. Have a great and safe night, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Good night.